This is the State of Things, broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. Hip-hop used to be the sound of the African-American underground. But with groups like N.W.A., Public Enemy, and Run D.M.C., hip-hop made its way into the mainstream during the 1980s. Fast forward 30-some years, and hip-hop has insinuated itself into the very fabric of society. Art, movies, clothing, language, you name it, hip-hop probably has had an effect. And while many in the African-American community celebrate the rise of hip-hop culture, others worry about its impact. Dante James and Sheila Smith McCoy wanted to look at all sides of the hip-hop phenomenon in the U.S. and around the world. Dante James is Assistant Director of the African American Culture Center at NC State University. Sheila McCoy is the director. They wanted to feature hip-hop culture at this year's annual Africana Studies program, African Diaspora Film Festival at NC State. They put together a program that highlights the positive aspects of the art form, its value as a medium of expression and protest, as well as the downsides like misogyny and homophobia. Dante James and Sheila Smith McCoy join me in the studio now to talk about the festival. Welcome. Good to have you here.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Sheila, tell us about the history of the festival itself. This is the 10th year?
This is actually the 10th festival, but we've been doing it for 11 years. The Africana Studies program instituted the film festival to sort of give us a good look at the way that the nuances of African and African descent cultures appear in popular culture and to have these discussions around documentary film issues. And we sort of started it, my predecessor began it 11 years ago, to look at what he called Afro-optimism. So part of what he wanted to address was the ways in which the Western media always depicts things in African and African descent cultures as being negative. And so we've had this idea of Afro-optimism going on in the festival. I began directing Africana Studies in 2006 and the African American Cultural Center this year, last year in April. And part of what we wanted to do was to continue that tradition, but also sort of bring in issues that are of import to the community and also to academia. So hence we have hip-hop, community, culture, and critique.
Well, I want to pursue this idea of Afro-optimism a little bit further. Are you talking about a kind of optimism that exists over and against the perception of, say, the dominant media forms or the way it's actually reflected, the way you can find flecks of it in popular culture?
Both. The dominant media tends to depict Africa and African descent cultures negatively. And in speaking about hip-hop, when it becomes a commercialized enterprise, that kind of negativism sort of is remembered there. So that's part of the conversation we should have today.
But this festival itself, Dante, is going to highlight both the positive and the negative. It's not to say that hip-hop culture is all shining glory when it comes to culture.
Absolutely. Excuse me. One of the things that we wanted to do was to reflect the complexity of it. It is not all good, all bad, but it is reflects many things across the spectrum of African-American culture, and we wanted to explore that in the context of these films, both theatrical releases and documentaries. And that way, we thought that we could also, that the films would be a good vehicle in terms of reaching young people.
Well, let's get an example right here. The first film in the festival is a movie called Juice. It starred Tupac Shakur, and the film was made back in 1992. Shows the importance of hip-hop in urban African-American lives at that time. Remember, this is 1992. It also shows some of the downside, this thug life that begins to work its way in the 90s in terms of the imagination and the presentation of hip-hop culture. Let's hear this clip.
Yo, what's up, Q, man?
Yo, how you doing, man? It's good to see you, man.
I'm all right, man.
Yo, how's your crew? Yo, they outside waiting. Yo, what's up with you? Yo, when you got parole, man?
Yo, man, I just got parole the other day, man.
Cool, man. I hope you're taking care of yourself. Word up.
Come on, man. This Blizz. Of course I'm taking care of myself,
what's
man.
Cool, man. It's nice to see you, man.
Yeah, pardon me for a second. I'm about to rob this place.
All right, everybody, put your hands in the air. Hey, yo, Q, you want a piece of this?
Nah, man, I'm all right.
All right.
That's a scene from the 1992 movie Juice, going to be shown Monday, April 2nd at 7 o'clock on the campus cinema at Witherspoon Student Center. In the meantime, we're talking about it today. Dante, in that scene, is a guy who just got out on parole. He's doing okay. What does that scene tell us about the complexity of hip-hop culture?
Many things. And it also goes back to the commodification and the push by record companies to frame hip hop in a gangster kind of context. The idea of fusing these two art forms that at one time were drastically different. I mean, when hip hop first started, it was something that grew out of the frustration and the oppression of the African American community. But as it became apparent that there was a larger market there, the larger record companies took control of it and started pushing these hip hop artists in that direction and defining them in the context of the gangster and the other negative connotations that are still currently associated with hip hop.
And Sheila, even in that, there's a good amount of complexity because there's only so much that a studio and a record company can do. There's a market for it. There had to be, or they wouldn't have pushed in that direction.
Well, yes, and but there's a complication there as well. I almost laughed at that clip when he's having this conversation. So, oh, pardon me. Let me go rob this joint. So that you have that sort of tension between what is supposed to be going on and what is actually going, that juxtaposition is clearly there. But you have to think about the ways in which dominant culture in the United States has looked at stereotypical images of people of African descent. And in hip hop's case, particularly this idea of masculinity, and which sort of the flip side of that, what happens with women in hip hop culture. And so if you look back at the early interviews of NWA starring Ice Cube, for one thing, their first album comes out, and he said that they had to be tough. They had to present this to sell the records. It wasn't about their particular images at that time. And you also find that today's hip-hop artists are complicit in this stereotype. I mean, there's going to be a new album released. There's going to be someone going to prison. And so this is a problem that I always caution my students about. Be mindful of the things that you are singing in your head and acting as if that is the way Black culture is. I've had people tell me in South Africa, walk up to me and feel sorry for me that I'm an African American because this image of African American culture is what is exported all around the world. And it's not my experience, and it's not the experience of the majority of African Americans, but this is the image that becomes commercialized through hip hop. So it's a complex paradigm.
The image is what dominates our imagination, the gangster, the thug, the misogynist, the homophobe. And yet there's something else, an element in this, that also makes it ripe for export, and that is its expression, the expression of protest over and against the dominant culture, which is, take us back across the evolution of hip-hop to the beginning when it was about an expression of an urban experience.
My goodness, I remember when hip-hop was born. It's like that child that you see going in the right direction, and then suddenly the world gets a hold of it and something else happens. When hip-hop was born, it was born out of the issues relating to African-American experience and cultural oppression, political oppression, and it was the voice of the people to call attention to these issues and to be a part of that. Even groups that later became somewhat commercialized, the song Fight the Power, I think about when we think about Do the Right Thing, express that kind of political power, that you do have a voice, that you can be heard. And this is what has made hip-hop a powerful method of social protest and to call attention to what's going on all around the world. So it's a medium that has a wonderful ability to express.
Dante?
Well, there's also a historical legacy in terms of African-American artists using their art as a form of protest. There's a quote from Richard Wright who says, "The artist is a revolutionary figure. The serious artist grapples with his environment, passes judgment on it. He helps to deepen people's perceptions, quicken their thought processes. He makes them conscious of the possibility of historical change. And in that way, he facilitates change." And I think it's that kind of philosophy that hip-hop actually really grew out of.
Mm-hmm.
But as it became apparent that there was a huge market there, then market forces came into play and actually altered the direction of it.
Well, and what your film festival, the Diaspora Film Festival, I think offers a great opportunity for us to do is to examine and discuss the ways in which this culture, the dominant culture, and the market forces, the financial agencies that push us in one direction or another, work in a democracy. In a totalitarian regime, you would shut down that protest and put people in jail. And there are ways in which that's happening, too. But in this kind of market economy, you simply swamp it. You co-opt it. You turn it into something that is benign, that can actually make you a few bucks, but is no longer a threat to political order. And I think that's one of the great things about a festival like this, where we can see that threshold, that moment when things change, and exactly how that works.
Truly, truly. And you have to think about the fact that many of the people who began this rap experience, this hip-hop experience, began it with this real call for social justice, to make a change, to call attention to. But like many things in American culture, money sort of changes the direction of that.
And the other way that you can maintain power over and against the many is to create division. And the divisions that were already, that already existed, get highlighted and glorified. I want to listen to another clip right now. And in this clip, we're going to listen to, it's, in fact, it's an interview with rapper Busta Rhymes. And the topic is supposed to be homophobia, but it doesn't get very far. Let's listen.
I'm dealing with homophobia in hip-hop, right? Homophobic lyrics and things like that.
I can't partake in that conversation, Holmes. That homo...
Yeah.
As you talking about?
Yeah.
I can't talk to you about that.
Why not?
Because I mean, with all due respect, you know what I mean? I ain't trying to offend nobody. It's my cultural, what I represent culturally, doesn't condone it whatsoever.
Well, let me just ask you this, Buster. Let me just ask you this. Do you think that a gay rapper would ever be accepted in hip-hop culture?
Pass the Henny and it's song. Say the word and we're gone.
All right, there it is. That's a scene from the 2006 documentary Hip-Hop Beyond Beats and Rhymes. Going to be shown Tuesday, April 10th at 7 o'clock. Campus Cinema. It's part of the Diaspora Film Festival. It'll be at Witherspoon. So there it is. And he walks out. That's a documentary that records that interview. Busta Rhymes can't even talk about the notion of a gay rapper. Dante, I'll start with you. I mean, this is one of the issues that hip-hop culture has to deal with.
Well, it is firmly entrenched throughout all of hip-hop culture, not only in terms of lyrics, okay, but if indeed you look at some of the music videos where they project this masculine, gangster kind of image, it's just firmly entrenched. And it's something that, as Busta Rhymes just did, many of them just won't deal with it. I mean, certainly they know that it exists. One of the reasons that we programmed the festival the way that it is that we want women. We want women to have a voice in terms of these images and these presentations that are prevalent throughout hip-hop culture.
And sadly, this is a part of the complex issue. We talk about it being hyper-masculinized, but what it actually is hyper-sexualized, which really has nothing necessarily to do with masculinity. It's interesting how precarious manhood can become when we think about hip-hop culture and in general, how you cannot be a man under all these things. It's almost as ridiculous as Don't Ask, Don't Tell. Certainly there have been gay rappers, but will there ever be a gay rapper who is able to be who he or she is in this context is the question.
And you also want to highlight some of the positive aspects, because we do talk about misogyny, homophobia, all of these things that trouble us when we think about hip-hop. But Sheila, there's a film that shows women using hip-hop to fight against female genital mutilation.
Yes.
Tell us about that one.
It's Saraba. It was directed by Maria Luisa Gambale. Her first film dealt with issues of difficulty as well, dealing with terrorism. And she focuses on the life of Sister Fa, who herself was what she calls a victim and survivor of female genital mutilation. Her work speaks to the power of hip-hop worldwide to really make significant changes in cultural views. Female genital mutilation has been a part of many African cultures for centuries, but through her work, she's actually been able to get some traction in that. And when women speak out, when the women of the culture speak out against it, then that's how you can stop the practice.
Do you think hip-hop is still viable as a medium for protest?
Oh, my goodness, yes. all over the world, particularly in the African diaspora, you see hip-hop being used to very positive ends to really address social ills, social lacks, to call attention and to raise consciousness. If you think about campaigns in Uganda that deal with HIV/AIDS and prevention, if you think about campaigns in Brazil that deal with issues related to health care for HIV/AIDS, it's a powerful medium. It's a powerful medium of protest. It's a powerful medium to call attention to these facts. But again, in American culture, we have found that co-option that we really want to tease out in the films that we're showing.
Is there a way in American culture, do you think there is still a sort of an underground, or is hip-hop still alive in this country, or has it been utterly swamped and sort of taken over?
Well, if you believe Nas and Common, hip-hop might have, we might be singing the death knell of true hip-hop. But there's a difference between what they might define as true hip-hop and the commercialized entity that we're focused on now. What do you think, Dante?
Well, that's a really interesting question. I think that certainly the commercial forces are strongly entrenched and in play. I have a nephew, and I was wrestling with and trying to understand that generation's infatuation with Tupac Shakur. And the young man told me, he says to me, well, this is the best way that I can explain it in terms of lyrics. Tupac Shakur to us is what Marvin Gaye was to you guys. Mm-hmm. And when he said it that way, I clearly understood. Now, whether or not there is currently another Tupac Shakur out there who would be equivalent to our Marvin Gaye, I don't know. But certainly there's a need for someone who speaks to these young people.
I would be remiss if I didn't pay homage to my son, who for a long time wouldn't believe that Tupac was dead. And he is a perfect example of the power of the medium. A very conscious young man, had a fine grasp of his own personal and cultural history. But you always see that tension in his work between that beautiful spirit and the thug life that he came to represent.
And there certainly is. I mean, if you think about these, the sort of market forces that have moved hip hop where it is today, I mean, everybody will tell you this is an unconscious kind of movement. This is just the way the system works. Does culture have that same power to find its own level and escape, essentially, the clutches? All right, you took that part, but we're keeping this, and we're going to move in this direction.
And I think we may see some of that movement in today's hip-hop. There are artists who refuse to be co-opted with the commercial line of thugism, but we've got a whole generation who has embraced that, whether it's embraced it on an artistic level or whether they enact those things in their own lives is part of really what we want to tease out in this festival.
I want to thank you both for being on the program today. Dante James, Assistant Director of African American Culture Center at NC State University. Sheila Smith McCoy is the Director of the African American Culture Center. NC State's 10th annual Africana Studies Program African Diaspora Film Festival will be held April 2nd through the 23rd at the Campus Cinema, Witherspoon Student Center, NC State. Just ahead, the music of MC Taylor. Stay tuned.
I had a vision. I had a place near the sun, but I burned everyone with my vision. So from the city I planned with the quickness and ran for the open. Did I hurt anyone? Well, I thought it was fun. Now they tell me the cheer is wild as I was. So such a crazy dream for a child of mine, you who've grown so dark with the sun. Tell me your day, little wandering one, little wandering one. Beyond for the trouble. Got a gun to the head in the language of dead. I was peaceful. From the city I ran up into the mountain. Some new country mystic in my mind. Now they tell me